Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Love Talk Radio.
We're on the air, and I'm excited today to have with us Kathy Haley. She is a survivor of domestic violence and activist. Her story, or should we say nightmare, is one that needs to be told and retold to the millions of women experiencing domestic violence and stalking. Kathy is a regular speaker for the National Institute of Crime Prevention. And Kathy, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Well, I so appreciate you having me. This is, I think, a very important topic, and hopefully we have some listeners that will get something from it today.
God willing, we will. Now, can you tell us how you became a victim of domestic violence?
Well, it all started as briefly as I can tell you. Back in 1989, I married a guy that, you know, I loved, just thought I loved so much, and he loved me. Did not see any kind of signs that I thought were a problem before we got married. There was some jealousy, but I took that jealousy as that he really loved me. You know, he loved me so much that he was worried, and I did not see jealousy as any problem. So, got married, and soon after I married him, I was hired with the Florida Department of Corrections to be a probation officer, and I had wanted this job for years and finally got it and was very excited and thought my husband would be excited for me, but instead he was angry that I got the job, and he didn't want me to take it, and I had to basically beg him to be able to take the job. So once I started being a probation officer, things went downhill, because one thing was he didn't have the control over me. He didn't know where I was. I was out in the field seeing, you know, my caseload. So my husband, Dave, began to get really jealous and possessive and started to become verbally abusive toward me. And, you know, when I say verbally abusive, It was name-calling, putting me down, you know, telling me things that I never dreamed I would hear from him. It just started going downhill from there, where the verbal abuse started. And I tried to do things to make him happy, but... Mm-hmm. Really, Mary, nothing seemed to work. It just got worse from that point on.
From the verbal, it developed into the physical?
Yeah, it did. It really was a traumatic thing for me. The first time he was... The verbal abuse is traumatic. I mean, because it sticks with you. You
sure.
Hear so often, you're fat, you're ugly, you're... this, that, and that makes your self-esteem become lower and lower, and you don't feel
because
real good about
yourself. Because
you're
self-conscious, definitely.
Yes, it does. And the physical abuse started one night, and it was the first time that he actually laid his hands on me. He slapped me across my face because I was late coming home from work, and I'll never forget when he slapped me that it shocked me. It really, I couldn't believe that he had hit me. So I was very angry at him, and I called the sheriff's department, and I figured that they would come out and just tell him, you know, that don't do that again, that's wrong, you're not supposed to hit your wife. And kind of the opposite happened. This was many years ago when law enforcement didn't have the proper training. in domestic violence. And they believed him and not me. And he said that he never touched me, that I was lying, that I was basically crazy and all this stuff. And they didn't do anything. They just told me that if I called them again for that I could be arrested for a false report. So,
and what was your profession at that time?
I was a probation officer. I was a law enforcement officer, which was really, you know, people say, how could you, you know, be in law enforcement and let that happen to you? Well, I'm here to tell people that it can happen to anyone in any profession. It doesn't matter your income, your race, your age. It happens to anyone at any time. And I had no training on domestic violence back then either. So I really did not know what I was entangled in. He made it as though that everything was my fault, you know, that I caused all the problems. So basically being brainwashed, I felt that it was my fault and it was my duty to try to make things better. And, of course, they didn't get better. They got worse. The physical abuse continued off and on and got worse. And, you know, I didn't call. I didn't call law enforcement because I thought, of course, I might get arrested for something, you know, and so I was scared to tell anyone or call for help. So I stayed in it, always trying to make things worse. And he would say he was sorry. I heard that so many times, Mary. I can't, how many times he said he was sorry for what he did. That he loved me, that he wouldn't do it again. And every time I wanted to believe him, but, you know, it happened again. And that is so common. When I hear victims, they'll tell me. And I talk to victims that you wouldn't believe, you know, they could be a judge's wife, a police officer's wife, a doctor's, you know, or, you know, an everyday housewife. And it's mainly women. There are men who are victims, too, of domestic violence that I have.
I was going to ask you about that because I've heard some cases where the men have been the ones abused by the women.
Yeah, there are some men that are, and they are even more embarrassed about it. So they more often than not don't say anything because of embarrassment.
Sure. Their masculinity and their ego both.
Oh, yes. But the majority of the cases are women and that go through it. But I tell you, I did not have a clue what was in my future. You know, I had no idea. But I tried my best to make it work and thought, and he also was good at, he told me if I ever left him, he would kill himself, kill my dog, you know, and that's scary stuff when you hear that.
I can imagine.
You know, he said things, and then he eventually said that he would kill me if I ever left him.
You get out of the situation?
Well,
you left him.
It wasn't because how I got out was a very unfortunate incident that occurred. In that we were both arrested one night. He, again, was being physically abusive. He was punching me in my face. Mary, I'm telling you, I thought that I was going to die that night. He was punching me so hard in my face and in my upper body. And I attempted to get to the phone in the kitchen, and he pulled the cord out of the wall, threw the phone in the living room, said I wasn't going to call anybody, that he was tired of me being he called me a slut and a whore, all these terrible names. And I just was scared so bad for my life that we were in the kitchen, and I picked up a knife, and I told him to leave me alone, not to hit me again. And I thought that would get him away from me, but he just laughed, and he came at me again. So I stabbed him, but I didn't, you know, try to, I didn't want to hurt him at all. I just barely poked him basically with the knife, but it scared him enough that he got off, he got away, and he went to the bathroom, and I was able to call 911 in the phone in the bedroom. Well, they came, they saw two injured parties, and they arrested me for aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and they arrested him for domestic violence, even though I told them that I was defending myself. Well, mm-hmm. I had to go to jail, and that made things change for me when I got arrested and had to go to jail. This light went on in my head, Mary. It told me I might lose everything because of what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. And so I decided that I had to leave him. So we both were released from jail with a bond and a court order. I had a court order not to be around him, and he couldn't be around me at all. So I thought I was safe at that point. And I moved in with my father, who lives where we lived about 15 minutes away. So he knew where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
And he started calling me. And, you know, I told him, I said, you're not supposed to call me. We have a court order. And he just laughed, and he said, don't worry about that court order. You know, that doesn't mean anything. I can be around you. And he wanted me to come back home. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to obey the court order. You know, and he started stalking me at that point. He started driving by my dad's house, and I was able to still go to work even after that charge, because they basically knew that, you know, I was a victim at that point. But he started calling my work, coming by my work, but I never called the police and told them he was stalking me. I never did that. And that's one thing I try to get victims to please follow. If they have an injunction, to please make sure they call the police and let them know that the individual is stalking them, following them, calling them, leaving messages, because that's so important. Even though it's a piece of paper, it still is a tool that can be used. And
it could save a life.
It could. And I failed to use that tool. And the reason is I didn't want him to go back to jail. I felt sorry for him. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I thought, Mary, that he would just go away, that he would eventually just leave me alone. But that was not the case. When you see, when there were so many signs that I did not see that I should, if I'd have known more, if I'd gotten educated, if a victim advocate would have talked to me and told me the signs to look for a possible problem, you know, I might, things might have turned out different. But unfortunately, 10 days after we both had gotten out of jail, I remember leaving work about 8 o'clock at night on October 6, 1992. I left work, pulled into my dad's driveway, and everything looked fine. There was nothing out of place, nothing wrong, and got out of my car, And the next thing I know, I see Dave, my husband, come around the side of the garage. Well, I didn't know he was there. He had parked his car about a mile away, walked to my dad's house, and was waiting on me. So when I saw him, I knew something was wrong. I just instinctively knew he was going to do something to me. And I could not go. He was where I couldn't go inside the house. So I started running down the driveway to a neighbor's house, and he was right behind me. And as I was running, he started shooting me with a gun. I got shot in the back of my right arm. I was still running. I got shot in the upper left part of my back. That bullet went through my ribs and stuck in my lung. I was still running. The third shot hit me in the lower center part of my back, and that bullet made me fall right on the face up on the driveway. I was hoping at that point he'd run away, but he didn't. He came, stood right over me, pointed the gun right at my head, and I was waiting for him to pull the trigger. And right before he shot me in the head, the gun must have jerked just a little bit. He was intoxicated, and he was probably scared, too. And right before he pulled the trigger, the gun jerked, and he shot me again, and he got me in my abdomen. At that point, he thought that I was dead. Luckily for me, it was dark and it was raining, and he really couldn't see, so he thought he had shot me in the head. At that point, I was lying there, and I saw him put the gun to his left temple, and he pulled the trigger and fell down right beside me. And I knew that he had killed himself. And, Mary, that
Kathy,
was the most frightening, scariest thing. I knew, I just knew I was probably fixing to die. You know, God has different plans for our lives sometimes. And
He did not want that to be your time yet, that's for sure.
No. You know, what's interesting is no neighbors, my dad's got neighbors around, and no neighbors heard anything. One neighbor said they thought they heard firecrackers or something. And nobody called, nobody came out and called for help for me. But I was somehow able, with my left hand, get my pocketbook and get our phones that we had just got issued by the Department of Corrections. I was able to somehow get that phone out. I couldn't see anything. I didn't know really what I was doing. I was kind of going in and out of consciousness. And
sure.
I had that phone, and it was a big phone back then. Those were big phones back then. And
yeah.
I just started pressing buttons with my thumb, not knowing really what I was doing. And I happened to press redial. And I heard a voice on the other end. And it was another probation officer. And I told them, I don't really remember, but I told them where I was and that I needed help. And that was how I was able to survive four gunshots. I was very, very fortunate.
Oh, definitely. The angels were watching over you that night. Now, how is your life now as a survivor, Kathy?
Well, as a survivor, it was really tough at first. I mean, I thought, you know, when I heard the doctor say to me, Kathy, you're never going to walk again because one of the bullets that hit you in your lower spine paralyzed you. I thought, you know, at first my life was over. I wasn't going to be able to do what I did before. You know, I was very depressed, and it really was a sad time. But I was able to pull out of that and look at life that, you know, things could have been worse, and I need to make the best of my situation. and with some help from other people, because you need help. You can't do things alone. You can't do things yourself. With a lot of people helping me, I was able to get out of the depression and look at, I started thinking about, why did this happen? What could I have done different? And can I help other people possibly not let it get as far as it got for me? So I started studying about domestic violence and learning things and going to trainings after, you know, I had gotten out of rehab and all that. And I learned, you know, as much as I could about domestic violence and started helping victims that were going through a similar situation that I was. And I found that it was, there were so many victims of domestic violence. It's unbelievable. And through my story and what signs that were there that I should have, if I had gotten educated, would have picked up on, would have seen, you know, things possibly would have turned out different. So I tell victims those signs to look for, that there is help. There are shelters. You know, a lot of victims don't want to go to shelters, but that they're a great place if you're in an abusive situation and you have children. You can take them there, and it's temporary, you know. I tell victims, your life is much more important than your property or your things, or your clothes, you know. That can all be, you can get those again, but your life, you can't. So,
I love your statement that says, if I can help one victim survive, I believe I survived for a reason. And
yes,
that is, you know, the way that you give back, because you live through it and you can help so many individuals. Now, I know that you also talk about violence in the workplace. Are there signs that people could be on the lookout for? Without going into a lot of detail?
Yes, there are. You know, violence in the workplace is a kind of a strange thing. People think that, you know, it couldn't happen here, but there are certain, and there always are, you know, we say there's signs, you know, like, and you can't prevent everything, but if you see, you know, for instance, a person that is working, they are always unhappy. Things are going on in their family. People listen, but they don't always listen enough to really think something is really really off with someone. But people that show certain signs of depression, of anger, of frustration in the workplace, of saying things, you know, like, I'm going to get them back. If I get fired, I'll get them back. You know, there are certain subtle things that people can just say to a supervisor or something, you know, I think that person is not, you know, not right, because I hear them. They talk about how depressed they are and that they would try to get somebody back if they were fired or things. And especially when someone is fired and they feel like they were fired for no reason and they said things that are out of line, you need to say something to higher up people, so that maybe you could help prevent a problem, you know, violence happening in the workplace. And also with victims of domestic violence. If you're a victim of domestic violence, sometimes the abuser will come to the workplace, and because that's where they know the victim is. The victim might be in a location that they don't know where they're living, but the the abuser knows where they're working. And sometimes they will go to the workplace and try to kill the victim. And a lot of times in situations, they kill innocent people. So
that's the saddest part when you hear about that.
That is. And I tell victims to let your supervisor know that you are a victim of domestic violence. And if they won't let you move locations or whatever, tell them to tell other people that work there, or put a picture of the abuser, send a picture around. And if this individual comes to the workplace, you know, tell somebody in a hurry.
That's a great
because,
tip.
Yeah, because there might be a problem for sure. So it's all about, Mary, it's all about hearing, listening, and telling someone. Just like in school violence or bullying, if we as a society become more vigilant in listening and and hearing certain things, and it doesn't hurt to say, you know, this individual's talking, you know, he's writing things that are, you know, saying he's going to hurt people. There's no problem in telling someone that and letting them know that you heard that individual say they're going to come back and kill people or hurt people.
And hopefully, you know, by listening and sharing, it would prevent something bad from happening. Definitely.
That's correct. So don't be afraid to speak out and speak up. That's what I say.
Now, I like to share the domestic violence hotline number, if I may. That's 800-779-7233. And the TTY is 800-787-3224. Again, the domestic violence hotline number is 800-779-7233. Kathy, I cannot tell you how much we love you, and it's a blessing that to have you on the show today and that you survived so you can share your nightmare and your wonderful ideas and suggestions with others that may be going through this.
Thank you so much, Mary. I just hope that if someone is listening, if they call that hotline number can give them all kinds of tips, safety precautions, safe ways to get out of a abusive relationship, and certain things that they can do to help themselves, and if they have children, help the children also. So I appreciate you allowing me to be on and get the message across that there is help and hope for victims of domestic violence.
It's been wonderful. And thank you, everybody, for listening to us today. And share this information with anyone that you might know that needs it. And we look forward to seeing you on the show again next month. Take care. Bye-bye.